Psalm 23, verse 4 is our text today. There's no more familiar psalm that has ever been penned than Psalm 23. There's some that could be close, but I think that for the last 3,000 years, it has probably been read more than any other from the time that David penned it in Hebrew, and as it's been translated in countless languages and dialects, it has brought comfort to the people of God regularly. I can't tell you the number of times that I have been asked to read this psalm at a funeral. And so it is a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful psalm. Verse number 4 says, "Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me." 2 weeks ago, we were in verse 2. On that day, we were laying in tender grass. The shepherd had brought us to a beautiful pasture. The grass was succulent. It was nice and tender. There's nothing hard and brittle about it. It was just a beautiful, beautiful pasture land, a meadow land. And then, after we had a little bit of tender green grass to eat, he took us over beside the still, quiet waters. And we were able to just drink until our thirst was quenched. And so we were there 2 weeks ago. 1 week ago, after we had had the grass and after we had had the water, and we had rested, our souls were restored. But you don't get to live in the pasture all the time. You don't get to live by the quiet water all the time. Sometimes there's a change in the terrain. And that's what we see today. I really believe that the valley of the shadow of death is a valley that I have visited on two occasions. If you were to leave Jerusalem, headed down to Jericho, now somebody would say, "Now wait a minute, I think Jerusalem and then Jericho is north." It is. But you still go down to Jericho because Jerusalem is so high that you go down to get to Jericho even though it's north. And so I hope that that makes sense to you. But what connects those two is something called a wadi. It is a W-A-D-I. This wadi, and this is on. Would you move it, Karen? It's not working. There we go. Okay. There's a picture called the Wadi Kelt. It's pronounced Kelt. It's spelled two different ways. It is Q-U-E-L-T and K-E-L-T. And what this wadi is, it is a ravine. And during the rainy season, from sometime in, say, November through April, this wadi will have a lot of water in the bottom of it. And this wadi connects just outside of Jerusalem near Bethlehem, and it heads to Jericho. David would have been very, very familiar with this as a boy. He would have been able to travel this wadi. He would know which trail to take. He would know the danger of it. It's been said that many Bible characters traveled this wadi. This valley that has huge mountains on each side of it. David would have traveled it. Hezekiah traveled it. Zedekiah traveled it. And can I tell you that the Romans even traveled it? Do you know that the Romans were known as great road builders? You heard the old saying, "All roads lead to Rome." Well, they believed in having a good highway system, and so they began to go and excavate much of this so their military would have some semblance of a road to be able to travel on so that they would have water at the ready. This is the same road that Jesus would travel on. When you read about Jesus going to Jericho, he's on this road. When you read the story of the Good Samaritan, it's probably on this road, because you have all types of rocks that have jutted out. There's all types of dens and all types of lairs that predators would have been laying in wait for the sheep, and robbers would lay in wait for an unsuspecting person coming by. Hence the Good Samaritan story. And so you've got this wadi. On the two occasions that I have visited this, the second time I went, I had a little forethought. And on the pulpit, I brought out of my office, I keep them on my bookshelf. There are three rocks. You go, who cares about rocks? Well, I do. I care about these especially. The reason is because I picked up these rocks at the Valley of the Shadow of Death. Now, I didn't just get these three. I kept these three. Several years ago, when my grandson was in the, I think he was in the first or second grade, I was asked to come to his Christian school and share some pictures of my trip to the Holy Land. So I put together a little slide presentation, and I went out to the school that he attended. And before I left to go, someone called and they said, would you mind if the other class, they have two of the classes, and I was supposed to speak to his, would you mind if the other class comes in and participates? And immediately I'm thinking, now wait a minute, I was going to give all these kids some little crosses, some little olive wood crosses. With all of the kids in both classes, I don't have enough. So what am I going to do? So what I did was I reached into a little Ziploc bag that I had, and I had picked up about 40 of these rocks when I was at that valley. And so after I got finished showing the slides and talking about this place and that place, I said, now kids, look, I've got something for you. And I started giving the girls, every one of those little girls in both those classes, I gave them a little olive wood cross. And they were excited about it. And I said, now boys, I got something for you. I've got some rocks from the Valley of the Shadow of Death. And these boys are like, yeah, this is good. Then all of a sudden the girls are like, we want rocks. They didn't care about the cross, they cared about the rocks. Well, they had to stick with the crosses because they didn't have enough rocks. But I kept these rocks, and there's not a day that I walk into that office and look at my bookshelf that I don't remember the Valley of the Shadow of Death. And so the seasons that we go through in our lives, they change. And when those seasons change, the terrain has to change. All of us like living in the pasture. All of us like living on elevated ground. Do we not sing that song, Higher Ground, in our hymnal? I'm pressing on the upward way, new heights I'm gaining every day. We sing that song. We want to get to the higher ground, which means we want to have a closer walk with the Lord than we have ever had before. But can I tell you that you don't get a helicopter ride to get there? If you begin to look at the passage, you'll notice that we go from the pastures now to a hard place. And there are times when God's people have to leave the pasture and the quiet waters, and they have to go through hard places. The first thing that I want you to look at this morning is I want you to look at the first part of verse 4, and I want you to see a dark passage. He says, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. The first thing that I want you to notice in that little phrase as we begin to unpack this verse is I want you to notice that it's a walk. And you're not just walking, you're walking through. It doesn't say anything about dying. It may be where you think you're going to die, but it's a walk. It's not a death march. It's a hard march. And there are times when God's people have had to go through things that they probably would have chosen death. I can think of a couple of stories. Years ago, we had a family in our church, and the man participated in all of the athletics at the church. And then he and his wife split. She left him and ended up marrying another man. And he told me, he said, Brother Tommy, he said, I think I could have handled one of us dying better than the divorce. He said, as a matter of fact, he said, there have been nights when I wished I would have died instead. Thanks be to God, he's doing great. I talked to him about a year ago, and he is doing well. But at that time, he was going through some deep, deep water. He was traveling through the valley of the shadow of death. And so we see that there is a walking. Now, the valley that he is walking through, it is a valley that has much danger. You remember the story of the Good Samaritan, which I alluded to a moment ago. What happened? There were robbers that were waiting on this man to come by all by himself. Now, during the time of David, that road was much more narrow. It's been estimated that in that Kelt Wadi, that at no point in the bottom of that valley was it more than 12 feet wide. There was water in it, because the shepherd knew that the sheep, even though they were going to new land, he knew that they still had to have water on a daily basis. He also knew this, that there were certain spots in the bottom of that wadi, in the bottom of that deep, deep valley, where there would be a little pasture here and a little pasture there, and because of the water, the grass would have stayed green. The summer sun necessitated a move. And do you know that those walls of that canyon are so steep that only at 12 noon does the sun reach the very bottom? Because once it gets past about 12:15 or quarter till 12 to about 12:15, it goes dark. Even in the daytime, it's dark, with the exception of the sun when it's directly overhead. And so you've got this shepherd, and he knows exactly what is happening. And so he knows about the dangers. He knows about the predators. Do you remember the story of David with him killing the bear and the lion? It could have happened on this very, very valley floor. And so there's a dark, dark passage that we see. There's a second thing that I want you to see this morning. And I want you to see a delightful poise. You know, there's some people, they just seem to be cool, calm, and collected in times of trouble. I don't remember what it was advertising it, but there was something one time on television when I was a kid that talked about it's cool, calm, and collected. Anybody remember that phrase? Few of you do, all right? The ones that are older than me will, and those that are younger than me probably don't. But have you ever known of a Christian that they just seem to handle adversity better than the average Christian? I think that what happens is that the longer you have gone through a trial, the longer that you have had to travel through that dark place, I think that there is a trust that is developed. As a child, you get scared about some things. Sometimes our little souls are anxious. I remember when I was a kid, I would go to the farm sometime in the summer, and I would work in the fields about 2 days a week and fish the rest. And so I remember when I was about 14, I was working 2 days a week at my uncle's farm, and then I'd go with another uncle to the Autumn Hall fishing. But whenever we would do those tobacco barns back then, what we would have to do is you would have to go out in the nighttime to make sure that the furnaces had not gone out. Because if they went out, it would not cure correctly. And I remember here, I'm a 14-year-old boy. You know, and when you're 14, you can't tell somebody you're scared. Now, you might be, but you can't utter a word of it because you're close to being a man. And I remember thinking when my uncle told me, he said, "Tommy, I need you to go check the furnaces at the barn." Now, we're in the country. We had electricity, and there was one street, it wasn't a street, it was a dirt road lamp. And when you got away from that, it was dark 30. And so he would say, "I need you to go to the barn, look inside of it, and make sure that the furnace is still running." And all I'm thinking is, I could step on a snake. And I don't like snakes. Now, we've seen two at our house this year. They're both black snakes. Chad saw one the other day on his basement side of the house. Deb saw one heading toward the carport, and she freaked out. I saw a snake skin a year or two ago in my shop. And all I'm thinking is, if you're a black snake, I'm going to let you live unless you scare me. If you scare me, you've got to die. So stay away from the house. All right? You've got things that scare you. And I would think, "Lord, don't let me step on a rattlesnake. Lord, don't let me step on a copperhead." And I'm telling you, I would look in there and I'd see those little blue flames going. I'd shut that door and back to the house I would go. And when I got in the house, it was like, I can see something again. I remember hearing about a little boy, and it was evidently he lived in the country too. And it was dark on the back porch and in the backyard. And his mother told him, said, "Johnny, I want you to go, and I want you to get the broom that I left on the back porch and bring it in the house. I need to sweep." And he said, "Mama, it's dark out there." And she said, "It'll be all right. Just go on out there and get the broom." And he got to the door and he turned around and he said, "Mama, I can't go." And she said, "What are you scared about? Jesus is out there." So she turned around and went back to the other room, and he thought for a minute and he said, "Well, okay." So he cracked the door and he goes, "Jesus, if you out there, hand me the broom." That's the way we are sometimes. If you out there, hand me the broom. Oh, but let me tell you something. When you've been handed that broom over and over and over again, there's a poise that you have. And it gets to the point to where you become almost giddy. All right? What happens? Well, it's to the point where you have such confidence in God that it's like your soul begins to boast. I don't mean in a prideful way, But when you've seen God do things over and over and over and over, does that not do something for you? I'm telling you, sometimes when the waters get deep and the fires get hot, God just comes through and it just boisters us. And then we can have a poise. We can walk back going, well, I know that's a lair over there and that a bear could be in it. It's okay because Jesus has protected me. Oh, I know that it could be a lion's den, but Jesus has protected me. I often think about a lion's den, about old Daniel. And I want to ask Daniel when we get to heaven about that. You know, we can use our imaginations about things, and I just always imagine that night that him not fretting a bit with those lions. Could have been that God just said to one of them, Clarence. You say, why did I say that? Because there was Clarence the Cross-Eyed Lion at one time. It was a movie. Long time ago. Look it up. Clarence, go over there and lay down. Daniel needs some sleep. And he sleeps that night in the lion's den. And yet in the morning, he's not harmed. And all of a sudden, God has come through. But can I tell you something? When he was first put in that lion's den, do you not think that was a valley? Do you not think that he's thinking, well, this could be it? He had three buddies, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They were put in a fiery furnace. And they said, well, if we die, we die. But the next day, there's four people in there, and the fourth one was likened unto the Son of God. Can you not think that that fire and that furnace was not a valley that they were willing to go through? But they had such confidence in God that they were willing to just give their lives if that's what it took. But God had come through for those three Hebrew children and for Daniel time and time again, and he's come through for us time and time again. My wife and I talk about this every single day, about what God has brought us through in just the past 2 months. I mean, we look at how that God has done this and God brought this together and God brought that together. I'm talking about from the time that she got sick to the very people that were taking care of her. It was people that we knew, that we had confidence in, and it seemed as though every day she made a good stride. The other day she had a little setback, but she's doing great again. And we just thank God for bringing us through that valley. And you can testify in your own life of that. Whether when you lost a loved one, when you went through an illness, when you had a child that went wayward, whatever it is. And God has come through and has given you a confidence where that your soul boasts in the Lord. And so we see that he says, I will fear no evil. I don't care if the lion comes. I don't care if the bear comes. I don't care if a couple of robbers jump out. Because I've got the Lord. Which brings me to my third point this morning. I want you to see a divine protection. Look with me at the latter part of verse 4. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Now, at first glance, you think, well, how can a rod and a staff comfort? Well, you've got to understand the implements. In the Middle East, sheep herders carry basically two implements. Now, in modern days, they probably would have more. If you were to go out west in our country, you would have a shepherd that would probably have a 30-06 strap to his back. But in these ancient times, and even in certain places in the Middle East today, you have shepherds that carry the basic necessities. They'll carry a rod. They'll carry a staff, and they'll carry a little bag that will have some ointments in it so that they can basically take care of any injured sheep. And so when it says thy rod and thy staff, those are two different things. Now, I mentioned the first Sunday about the rod a little bit. I told you the story of my grandfather with a big stick when a mother pig was coming after him. Well, the herders, the sheep herders, they would have a stick that would be anywhere from 30 to 40 inches long, and it would probably be at least 2 inches in diameter. It was a club. That's what it was. It was a club. And those little shepherd boys, when they were learning to be shepherds, because you see, in ancient Israel, every young boy had to learn a trade. And one of the tasks that many of these boys would have to learn, they would have to learn to be a shepherd. And I've read of them having contests with each other to see who would be the little shepherd boy that would be the most accurate when it would be throwing the rod. They would have different kind of contests with the rod. I remember as a kid, my mom signed me up for a boys' club called the Woodmen of the World. Some of you guys may remember that. And I remember they had obstacle courses and they had all of this stuff that a little boy could go through, and I just thought that was the neatest thing going. And I remember one of the things that we got to do, we got to throw hatchets. We had hatchets that we could throw to see if we could get those things to stick. And all I thought was that I was Mingo on Daniel Boone. Right? And you and I, we think about those fun things that we did as kids. But those shepherds were serious in their training, because they knew if they were going to protect, they had to be proficient with the rod. And so they would practice and they would practice and they would practice. And then, not only would they have the rod of protection, but they also had the staff of correction. Now, the rod and the staff sometimes is used interchangeably. Sometimes the Bible translators, especially in the Old Testament, they would interchange those two terms. And you have to look at the Hebrew to be able to find which one is specifically used. Can I tell you that the rod has to do with the power? There's nothing powerful about the shepherd's crook like there is about the shepherd's rod. When you think about a shepherd in the Old Testament, you don't just think about David. Probably one of the most revered, if not the most revered leader that Israel ever had was named Moses. I mean, when you think about ancient Israel, you think Abraham, but you really think Moses. I mean, he's the one that led them for 40 years. He's the one that saved their necks because God was going to wipe them out because of their murmuring, and he interceded on their behalf, and God stayed his hand. But when God was directing his life, Moses had to run because he had killed an Egyptian and buried him in the sand, and he had to flee, and he went to the backside of a desert and began tending sheep for 40 years. And after he was out there for 40 years, God spoke to him and he said, Moses, I want you to let my people go. I want you to go tell Pharaoh, let them go. And he's like, he's not going to pay attention to me. He said, you see that rod in your hand? It's in Exodus chapter 4. He said, throw the rod down. And when he did, it turned into a snake. And the Bible says that Moses fled from it. He had sense. All right? He had a stutter. And he said, Lord, I can't lead the people. And God said, Moses, I'll be with you. I can't speak. He said, you see that rod in your hand? He said, throw it down. And when he did, there's that serpent scaring Moses to death. He said, now reach down and take it up. And he said, Lord, I can't speak too well, and now I don't hear too well either. We just don't, we just sometimes think, Lord, do you really want me to do that? But he reached down and took it, and it turned into a rod again. It's right there in Exodus chapter 4. But you begin to read through the book of Exodus, and what do you find? You find the Hebrew word when they come to the Red Sea, when it says that he raised his staff, it's the same Hebrew word for rod. When they needed water out of the rock, what happened? He hit it with the rod. It's the power. And can I tell you that when we have the divine protection of God, it's because of his omnipotence? Who's going to overpower God? Nobody. Satan can't do it. Other than God, I guess he would probably be the second most powerful entity in the universe. You say, why do you say second most? Because there's an angel over in Revelation that's going to put him in a hammer lock and throw him into the bottomless pit for 1,000 years. Now, I don't know that Michael could do it. The only way that Michael could overcome Satan over the body of Moses was when he said, the Lord rebuke you. He had to invoke God to do it. But Satan's a created being. He can do nothing except what God allows him to do. And so, we have the protection of the rod. But the sheep also have the staff for correction. Now, you don't take the staff, which some people call the shepherd's crook. You don't take that to beat predators away. No, the staff is what the shepherd would use as a third leg to walk. It's much like some of our people walk with a cane. Well, except that his is just taller and it's got a crook on the top of it. And what you would do is you're walking through this valley. You've got the little water that's dribbling down here in the summertime. There's enough for them to drink, but it's not flowing. But because it had been flowing, they got to watch for rock slides. You got to watch for a mudslide. You got to watch for a predator to come out. And you got to be ready, you got to be vigilant, and you've got that staff, and you're touching things, and all of a sudden, you look over, and you see one of your little sheep, and he's getting too close to a precipice. And he takes that staff, and he just touches the little sheep on its leg. What is that? He's correcting him. And there are times when the sweet Spirit of God just kind of nudges us. He comes into a situation and all of a sudden you just think, wow, that's some good direction right there. I mean, I was heading this way, but now this is better. And that's what the Spirit of God does. I would say that the staff is a symbol of the Holy Spirit. You have the crook on the end. So what is that for? Oh, you may have a little ewe lamb. And that little ewe lamb maybe has fallen into a little pit or a ravine. Can't get out. So what does the shepherd do? He takes that little 8 or 10 foot crook, that staff that's got that crook on the end, and he turns it upside down, and he reaches down, and he puts it under the two front legs, and he pulls it back up. He looks it over. Makes sure that the lamb is okay. If it's not okay, he'll put it on his shoulders and carry it to the resting place. And then he'll maybe splint the leg or put ointment on the leg. And so there is a correction. There is a helping that the staff gives, and there's a protection that the rod gives. Let me close with a verse in the Gospel of John. One of my favorite chapters in the whole Bible is John chapter 10. Jesus is the Good Shepherd. Verse 28 and 29 are something that they have blessed me literally my whole Christian life. I mean, from 1972, when I wept my way to Jesus, to me standing in this pulpit June the 7th, 2020, I have read this and it has given me assurance. It has given me a security. It has given me a peace. And what is that? That I am protected by God. And I give unto them eternal life, and they shall never perish. If you've been saved, you have eternal life. You're never going to go to hell. Neither shall any man pluck them out of my hand. Now think about that a moment. When you got saved and you were placed into the Good Shepherd's flock, you became in his hand. Who's going to be strong enough to take you out of Jesus' hand? Nobody. But it goes farther than that. My Father, which gave them me, gave who? You, the sheep. My Father, which gave them me, is greater than all. And no man is able to pluck them out of my Father's hand. So what do you have? You have been taken, if you've been saved, you've been taken and you've been placed in the hand of Jesus. Then you've been in the hand of God. And if you want to round out the Trinity, all you got to do is remember this. We are sealed by the Holy Spirit of God until the day of redemption. You got all three of the Trinity right there. And so we have great security because we are protected by the Lord. I want you to look at one more word in our passage. And that is at the first part when it talks about the valley of the shadow of death. It is a shadow. Can I tell you that shadows don't hurt people? They might scare you. Oh, I've been scared with shadows before. I'm about 16. Still remember this just like it happened last night. My parents and sister have gone to my grandparents. They're 70 miles away. But I'm 16 and I'm going to stay home. And that night I'm at home and a storm comes up. And I mean, it's coming, the rain's coming down and the winds are blowing, and all I'm thinking is, well, this is getting spooky. And so I just decide I'm not going to go to my bedroom and sleep. I'm going to sleep on the couch. So I lay on this couch, and all of a sudden, I hear something. It's like, shh, 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 shh. And I look up at the window, and there's something by the window moving. And my heart starts palpitating. And I'm thinking, there's a booger out there. First thing I do, I hop up off that couch. I go back to my bedroom and I grab my 12-gauge shotgun. And I pop a couple of shells into the chamber. And I'm thinking, they might get me, but I'm going to get a couple of rounds off here. So I laid that thing right next to the couch, laid back down on the couch and just listening. And you still see that moving. Finally, I thought, okay, I got to find out what this is. If it's a person, I got to know. They just, some things you got to know. And I had to know. So I picked up that Winchester, and I took the barrel of it, and I moved it over to the curtain, and I pulled it back. And what it was it was a limb that was on the window. It was a shadow. Do you know what? Once I realized that it was a shadow, I wasn't scared anymore. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. The shadow of death. You say, well, why is death a shadow? Because we're scared of it. Yeah, yeah. But can I tell you something? Jesus defeated death. When Jesus resurrected, it says the last enemy that shall be defeated is death. He defeated all enemies, but the last one is death. And you and I just need to realize that, hey, Jesus took care of death, and all we got to do is just walk through its shadow. And one final thing is this. You don't have shadows without some light. Now, if I brought a big light in here, I could put that light in front of me, and on that wall behind me, you would see a silhouette of me. It'd be a shadow there. But without the light coming this way, you don't see a shadow. You and I need to realize that Jesus is the light. And even though that light is bright, that light is beautiful, there are still shadows that we have to go through, because you got to have light for there to be a shadow. And so this morning, how are you walking? Are you walking in confidence? You're going through some dark places, but are you confident? Are you boasting almost in the Lord because of how He has given you that confidence? Are you trusting in His protection? Oh, I hope this morning that when you read the 23rd Psalm, you'll think about, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me.